And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh. This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang! Yeah,
yeah. With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writer.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Welcome to the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. We've got Trevon Edwards. We've got Jay King. We got Mo Doc Hill. And we've got a hell of a show ahead of you today. We're going to get into all kinds of stuff. John Morant's injury. Klay Thompson coming back. Maybe a hot seat in LA. Maybe a hot seat for a Celtics star. Maybe a number one prospect getting destroyed. All kinds of stuff. But we start off with the red hot Phoenix Suns, 16 in a row, the second longest winning streak in franchise history, one away from tying the record, which was set back in the 2006-2007 season when they had a 15 game win streak and a 17 game win streak all in the same season. And the Phoenix Suns take this 16 game win streak with a chance to tie that 17 game win streak record Tuesday night home against the Warriors, who have been the best team in the league this season. So, Trey, the Suns have been unbelievable. And here, this is the crazy thing. And maybe this is going to sound stupid. I don't feel like they've played all that well compared to a 16-game win streak. Like, I think this could get better. I think they could get even more dominant. I think they could, you know, Chris Paul's not really hitting three-pointers. Jay Crowder's not hitting three-pointers. DeAndre Ayton missed a bunch of time. Like, this team could get even better, and I think Devin Booker is just on another level right now.
Yeah, I mean, Book actually is starting to scratch the surface of the next tier of what he should have been a year or two ago. And I think that being a consecutive All-Star, making it to the finals as his first time in the playoffs, winning an Olympic gold, he understands that he truly belongs. It wasn't the 70 points. It wasn't, you know, getting there. I think that he's ready to make the next jump. But again, when you look at this roster, you look at the team, the off the court stuff with the, you know, with the Sarver and things of that nature, it gets smoothed over just because, again, the Suns aren't a sexy team, you know, and you want to take everything away from them and say, you know, oh, COVID, you know, this is why they made it, or injuries, and this is why they made it. But, you know, Monty Williams, credit to him, getting guys to buy in, you know, getting Chris Paul over there, guys believing, and they're rolling, you know. And they look like a real threat in the West. You know, and people still will say, oh, you know, the Lakers will figure it out. I honestly don't think the Lakers could probably beat them at this point. But again, until you win, you're not going to get that respect. The same way how we used to do the Milwaukee Bucks, right?
Yeah.
Where we would be like, yeah, that's cool. They won 50 games. They won 60 games. The number one seed. And they lose to the Heat. Until you get it done, they're just like the Utah Jazz to me.
Wow. Even though they made the finals last year?
But here's the thing. I respect the run, but it was a lot of injuries.
That doesn't sound like respect to the run.
I mean, it's almost a backhanded compliment, right?
It is a backhanded compliment. No,
yeah, it's not so almost.
So it is a backhanded compliment, right? And it's like, what more do we have to do? But the thing is, right? Good franchises don't care about regular season records.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. I want to shout them out for the streak that they're going to have. They're going to have 20-plus wins, streak wins wise. They're going to roll. I believe it. I think that it doesn't end in Golden State. I think they're going to beat Golden State. But How they figure it out in the playoffs is going to be a different story. And I'm not convinced yet.
Okay. So what would it take? Would it take just another finals appearance, a conference finals appearance? It's going to take a title for you to believe?
I think a Western Conference finals, because that's the closest thing. Making the finals back-to-back is tough.
Yeah.
Even when you're a loser. That's ultimate. But it's like having a good season and being an all-star one year and then not being an all-star the next year. You get what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You can't just guarantee and stamp somebody and say, they're great.
This is what they are, right?
Because yeah. It's so early. We haven't even played Christmas games. You know, I'm not trying to put that out in the universe. It's like, oh, an injury could affect this or something happens. But we can't just give it over and say, this is the Sun season. Because a lot can happen in 60 more games.
No, Trey, you're 100% right on that. Like, I was with the Clippers for Vinny Del Negro's last year. We went on a 17-game win streak.
Western Mass finest. Yeah. That's what we were all thinking, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Jay. We went on a 17-game win streak, went undefeated in December. Everybody was talking about, like, the Clippers look like actual contenders. This team should go win a championship. Yo, when the calendar flipped over and we went to the new year, we couldn't win a game. We were terrible. We stopped defending. Our intensity went down. All of those things. Maintaining that energy all year long is extremely difficult. And then we get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. So, Trey, I'm with you in that, like, hey, this streak is nice and it doesn't, you know, mean anything towards the playoffs. But the one thing I'll say is, even though I'm kind of with you on last year's finals run, I just feel like they've gotten so much swagger off of it, and the way they're playing and the way they're going about things this season, they look more like a championship level team this year than they did last year. And I feel like it's just the confidence that they have from that and everything they got going. So that's kind of my view of it for the Suns. I'm more into the Suns this year than I was last year, just because I think they got the flow now.
I think they're a more complete team too. Last season they went to the finals and they literally did not have a backup center. JaVale McGee, I mean, he's been the butt of jokes for a long time, but he was a very good addition for this team and something that this team needed. And then you look at Shamit, you know, that's a nice piece. Peyton can play some minutes sometimes. Like,
why are you laughing with these? You waiting for us to jump on you?
You don't even believe it. You don't even believe that last one. Yeah, stop it, Jay. You could have just stopped.
It's a more complete team than it was last season when they did make the finals.
Right.
The one improvement that I want to see if it's real is Devin Booker's three-point shooting. He's in the 40% for the first time in his career. It's weird because you feel like he's always been a great shooter because he's so smooth out there, but he never really has had that in his game. And so if he's a 41% three-point shooter, that's huge for them. But I'm just most impressed by their maturity. Like, they went to the finals. They're a young team. That was the first time a lot of them did anything in their careers, including Booker. He'd never been there before. He'd never achieved anything of substance. He gets to the finals. They come back, and they're still hungry. They're still driven. They're still doing all the little things. It's that hunger and that maturity level that I'm most impressed by, because you see a lot of teams make a run, especially young teams. They make a run, they come back the next year, and it's just not the same. Like, they think they've made it already when they haven't. This Suns team isn't like that at all. Exactly, like the Hawks had earlier in the season. But this Suns team hasn't had that at all. There's been no drop-off. If anything, obviously, they're just playing better and, you know, taking off where they left off last season.
Yeah, I'm not buying Booker as this kind of shooter, simply because he was at 37% a week ago, right? Like, he's been on a tear the last five games, and with such small samples, like hitting 53% of his threes over the last five games, that's pushed him above 40%.
And even 37 would be an improvement.
Oh, 37,
right?
Yeah. If he's like above what league average typically is, I mean, you take that from him. And then maybe this does hold, right? Maybe he is going to be a 40% three-point shooter. I'm just not buying it because I know a week ago I checked and he was under that by far. And so it's more the type of play for me, the type of shots that he's creating, the type of looks he's giving them. There was a sequence a couple of games ago. When was this? This must have been the Cleveland game. And, you know, Cleveland's whatever, right? Like Cleveland's banged up and everything, but they're down in a tight game. He goes and drives off a pick and roll, pulls up just left of the free throw line or maybe a little bit inside that, about 12 feet, hits a jumper. Next player, the play after, Chris Paul, to kind of put a dagger in the Cavs team, has a pick and roll, goes middle, snakes back to the left side to that exact same spot Devin Booker had and hits that and hits a shot. And it's just like, I watched that sequence and yeah, it's the Cavs without Evan Mobley, but I looked at that and Mo, I was just like, damn, they really can do whatever the hell they want in a tight game. And that's, I mean, that's the thing for me. Like, I think this is the second best team in the league. I'm buying everything with them. I just don't know that they're as good as the Warriors, right? Like, because if you look at it, you say, hey, if you want to just put these teams side by side, do the Suns have as good of an offensive player and as good of a defensive player individually as the Warriors do? No. And it's not a knock on CP3 and it's not a knock on Booker. It's just none of those dudes are Curry and none of those dudes are Draymond. And so in that, if that's the case, you know, that's going to be that extra step. But still, like, okay, they're only the second best team in the league. Boo-hoo.
And these two teams have been by far better than any other team.
Everybody,
in the
yeah.
It's not even close. It's not even close.
It's not even remotely close. You watch them and you're just like, okay, that's real basketball. And everyone else is just figuring it out. Brooklyn, Milwaukee, the Lakers. Jeez. I mean,
I wouldn't say they're figuring it out.
they're very far from figuring that out.
They are deteriorating as we speak.
Yeah.
But Zach, I want to go to your point real quick about comparing the two rosters. Because you're right. Between the Curry and Draymond. And that point, how do you feel about the difference between the supporting casts? Because at least like with the Suns, you know, Mikal Bridges has gone through this and been through this run. All of them, Ayton, been through this kind of deep run, you know, all the way to the finals. All these guys, Cam Johnson, Cameron Payne. When you're looking at it with the Warriors, I mean, besides Iguodala and Looney, you're depending on a lot of guys who've never been there. You
true.
Know, Jordan Poole hasn't been in a playoff
game.
You
know who's knocking on the door? Klay Thompson. And he doesn't even have to be Klay Thompson. He could just be Duncan Robinson. But his understanding of what that's going to be and what that's going to take, like, they're getting that guy back. And so to me, that's what, like, Klay may not be as good as everyone hopes he'll be at any point during this run. But you're getting him back. Like, Iguodala's old as hell, but he's still playing smart. Otto Porter, no, he hasn't been through it, but he's a smart basketball player. Bielitsa hasn't been through it. He's a smart basketball player. Like, they have guys with high IQs to mix in with the young guys to build that up. And you see it just every night with the way Curry and Iguodala and Draymond are raising the expectation for what these guys are supposed to do. And so, yeah, like, the Suns have a deeper team. The Suns have what looks like a more reliable supporting cast, but I think the Warriors supporting cast is going to be more than good enough to likely match that.
I'll just say one thing about the Klay part, though. I'm still worried about all the nagging injuries that are going to come throughout the season as he's trying to get his body right.
For sure, but it's like, not like they're not going to play him back to backs. They're not going to play him 30 minutes a game.
I get all that, but it's still going to be, you know, slight hamstrings, strains here and things like that. Like, all of the stuff that comes with coming back from just an Achilles alone is always a bunch of nagging injuries. Look at the year KD had. Like, he was awesome on the court, but he was always kind of not on the court sometimes.
For sure, but that's fair, but also, like, they don't play nearly the same way, right? Like, it's going to be a different impact on the body, and maybe Klay won't hold up, right? Maybe he won't, but if we're going to start talking like injury history, like, all right, so let's get into the Chris Paul conversation, you know, like, I mean, it's yeah, just,
no, but it's just one guy is coming back from not having played in 800 something days, you know? And I feel like that's where I'm going to, like, I'm all in, I'm excited for Klay, but I'm also just kind of more worried about how much we'll get to actually see him.
For sure. You know,
I'm worried about just the nagging.
But again, I'm not expecting him to be Klay Thompson. I'm just like, if he's Duncan Robinson, if he plays just like that.
You don't want the Duncan Robinson of this year.
I'll take Klay Thompson shooting with whatever Duncan Robinson's role is. Yeah, I'll take it.
Yes. Yeah, gotcha.
They beat a Brooklyn team on Saturday. Yeah, beat a Brooklyn team on Saturday that, you know, they've been the best team in the East kind of by default. Obviously, Kyrie Irving's not played, and James Harden James Harden had some confusing comments about, like, yeah, I don't know when to score or when to pass, or, you know, I'm when to do both, and just kind of trying to, you know, I'm just figuring
James
it out.
Harden.
And I'm like,
you're James Harden.
Yeah, like, dude, you're Trey, like, break this down for me. What the hell is going on with James Harden here? Because those, I've been with him throughout the season, like, hey, it's not that bad. And there was a stretch before this game, like five games, where like he was getting a shitload of free throw attempts, right? Like he's getting a bunch. I'm like, okay, he's kind of figuring it out. All right, he's looking good. He, you know, other than those first five or six games of the season, like his numbers are actually really good and he's played better and the better impact and everything. But then we have that comment and they lose to the Suns. And I'm not one to overreact to one loss, but Trey, the comments are what confused me about James Harden of like, what do you mean you don't know what to do out there?
It's very frustrating as a fan of James Harden, as a supporter of James Harden. I've been knowing James Harden since he was 8 years old, right? And to see him grow and blossom in his career, win MVPs, make all-star appearances, be one of the top five players in the game. And these last two seasons, right? The current one and last year, he's battled, you know, he's been known to be like an Iron Man and show up for his team in the regular season, right? But in this situation, you got one thing, you got his hamstring, right? It's one thing. And then now it's, oh, I don't know if I should shoot or pass. There's confidence issues there. But like, I don't even think that he's trying at this point because he's still, you know, those games that we say, oh, he's back, or we show those highlights are against very bad basketball teams.
Yeah, that's fair. That's really fair.
You know,
yes.
And it sucks because it's kind of like, no, the outlets are just as bad as people in his close circle to hype those games. Because it's like, he's not playing well. He's hunting. He's getting away with rookie defenders that have never guarded him. And they're getting caught in the cookie jar. Great. People that have guarded, he can't even get past centers anymore. And it's frustrating because I still believe in him. I still believe he can do things. But he's not helping himself. The three and key, that's not his strength anymore. He hasn't tried or attempted a mid-range jump shot. I don't know if it's just ingrained in his career playing in Houston or what, but he needs to figure it out. You know, he's pick and rolling for no reason. He's not even effective on the pick and roll anymore. And it's making Kevin Durant work extra hard. Hell, when they start the offense, they don't even get their number one option involved because he's dribbling the ball and trying to zip in a pass to a Blake Griffin. Well, Blake's in the doghouse, so I can stop using his name right now. But to anybody
Blake
else.
Griffin on the team? I see someone in a Blake Griffin jersey, but I haven't seen Blake Griffin this year.
Yeah, you're gonna see Blake Griffin more in the stands than actual on the floor. And it's unfortunate because like you hate to see these guys hit that level of, you know, they once were heralded, we loved them, and then their game kind of declines or age, father time shows up. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it sucks, but he's a liability. James Harden is even a liability out there at this point because, you know, if he's not turning the ball over, he's taking bad shots. You know, and until this point, the Nets have a real problem, right? And I know listeners are going to be like, how are they got a real problem? They're first in the East. The East is very bad.
The East is deep. East is deep, but it's not elite yet, right? Like Miami kind of tailed off. Milwaukee's getting going. Yeah, but Milwaukee will end up being an elite team once they're fully healthy and back.
That's the only team I fear.
Yes.
That's the only team that I'm like.
I don't think, well, Brooklyn, the way they're playing right now, I don't think they could beat Miami in a series.
And a hat tip to my Bulls, right? A hat tip to my Bulls. Like, they're playing good. But the East is really bad, and that's why they can kind of sit at top three and we can parade about the Bulls being in the conversation.
KD
right?
should not have to do as much as he's doing. Like that's it. You're right on that. Like KD is having to do way too much out there for what this team was constructed to do.
Looking at it too, right? He's a defensive liability. So you got Durant guarding 1 through 5. It's not a nod to Kobe and saying, oh, look at Durant. He wants to guard the best player. Nobody else can guard him.
It's necessity. Yeah. It's necessity.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody else can guard him at this point. So he's like, fuck, man, I got to go out there and guard him.
The Nets problem isn't that James Harden is bad. Their problem is that for as long as Kyrie Irving is out, they need him to be at an MVP level, and he hasn't
exactly
been there yet.
Exactly.
And so for eternity,
and I don't know whether it's the body. I don't know whether it's some other issue. Is it age? Is it he doesn't care as much? I don't know, but he hasn't been nearly at the level he was at last year. Last year,
I'm gonna say this, Jay. I'm sorry to cut you off. New York is a distraction.
That's not the New York City I know.
But this is the thing.
But this is the thing with New York. What are we talking about?
Hey, but you know what's crazy?
Sacramento, like, ooh, this is distracting.
No, he'll find a place. he'll find a way in Sac, bro. He'll build it if it doesn't come. So in this situation, most people never shout that New York is a distraction. They never shout it. They say, Houston? Yeah. This guy is wealthy in New York. He's playing a different type of ball game off the court. But do you want to be a basketball player? Do you want to be an elite basketball player? Do you care? It doesn't look like he cares out there. And I want to fight for him and say that he does. But he hasn't shown it.
Does he need to care right now? I'm asking that like legitimately, but when do you care though?
This is the thing, Jay. He's always been a good regular season player and has crapped out in the postseason. So do you think that
he's reversing it? He's like, you know what?
All right. I like that theory. We'll go with that.
He's going to blow these first 20 games instead of the last 20 games. And then, you know, we'll see what happens as he builds.
But on a more serious note, like, we have seen Harden in Houston at the end of his time there. He looked out of shape. He looked disinterested. Obviously, he was disinterested. He was trying to get out of there. But, like, he didn't look good at all. And then he got to Brooklyn, and a week later, he was playing at an MVP level. And so it's like, I don't know how much time he needs to get himself back into that level if his problems aren't age, if they're not his body not cooperating, if there's something else. Like, they don't need him to survive the regular season. They don't need him to be at that level right now. They're going to need it in the playoffs, though.
But I think,
and
Jay,
there's no margin for error there if Kyrie doesn't play. There's zero margin for error. He has to be brilliant for them when it matters.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
But Jay, I think what you're missing on here a little bit about it is this is the strain that it's putting on KD to have to do everything to keep this team as a top three team. Like, this is the problem, right? Like, with Kyrie there, then, you know, he would have been able to kind of coast for most of the regular season and things like that. But they are so dependent on him being that guy. Everything that Zach and Trey said, like, they're just putting too much strain on KD. Like, at a certain point, he needs the chance to just kind of chill a little bit on the court himself, and he's not getting that opportunity. And I think that's the real issue with Harden's struggles and how it affects the rest of the squad.
And that's the issue with Kyrie. One of the issues with Kyrie sitting out this long too is
right.
You know, all of a sudden it puts that strain on KD. Joe Harris has been out, so the offense really misses him. Like, he's a piece that just unlocks them. And it's put a ton of pressure on KD and James Harden. Last year, I thought they were going to struggle sometimes with the fit between Kyrie and Harden and KD. But it looked like they loved playing with each other, man. That team was selfless. That team meshed instantly. That team was committed to finding the best shot in a way that I didn't trust those three guys to do. Now I trusted them and it's going the other way.
So it's your fault. It's Jay's fault.
It's like now it's kind of like I thought it might be initially, where they're still figuring each other out. Harden's like, I don't know whether to shoot or pass now. Like, that's what I thought was going to happen instantly. But it's taking a little while. Yeah. And they're not having the joy. Like last year, it was so much fun to watch that offense. It was ridiculous. They're not sharing the ball as much. They're definitely not moving bodies at all. Like, it's a stagnant, like, for the pieces they have, that offense has been very underwhelming.
Yeah.
And then you add in Blake Griffin looking like, you know, a shell of himself. You have Millsap, not really a massive contributor. LaMarcus Aldridge has been great. But after that, it's like this whole team, you're looking
Patty
at the
Mills
construction.
Too.
Patty's been awesome. But after that, you're looking at him going like, all right, well, where else we get into play?
Yeah, I mean, to the point about him in the pick and roll, James Harden in the pick and roll, he's damn near 30 points per 100 possession. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He's damn near 20 points per 100 possessions worse as a scorer this year compared to last year. And he's turning the ball over about a third of the time. He's running a pick and roll. Think about that. That's insane. A
part
third
of
the time.
Kyrie being out, and part of it's Joe Harris being out too, though.
Part of it's the slippery fingers. A third of the time he's turning over. Like, it's one thing to miss shots, to give the ball away. He's giving like a third of the time. You run three pick and rolls, one of those ends up in the hands of the other team. That's insane.
How many times have you seen a video pop up where Harden is just like trying to cross somebody over and it just doesn't work? It's like,
yeah, he looks like me after Thanksgiving dinner,
weird.
Man. Like, just bloated, like, and like just
in the old
stumbling
days,
around.
You used to get the James Harden bad defense clips. Now you get like Harden crossing over and some big man rips him clips. It's tough.
I would go even how many of these are him still trying to get a foul that he's not going to get with the point of emphasis stuff?
I don't know. He went to the free throw line a bunch last like week and a half. I mean, maybe that's some of it, but I think the free throw thing is a little overblown at this point. I think that was more of a first couple of weeks of the season. He's still trying it, but I think he's just playing slow. It's better than I still think it's better than what you guys are saying, but it's definitely not good enough to where KD doesn't have to, you know, KD keeps having to like overdo everything. And KD's going to continue to do that because you put him on a court and he's going to try to win the game, right? Like, I don't think you can say to KD, hey, chill a little bit. We're trying to get James some work in. We're trying to figure this out. Like, KD's on the court. He's going to try to be a killer. And that's got to just
be
frustrating.
They have the 12th best offense right now.
Yeah.
The 12th best with James Harden and Kevin Durant.
Yeah. You know why?
They're behind the Memphis Grizzlies. They're behind
the ball
Sacramento
not moving.
Kings. They're behind the Toronto freaking Raptors.
They're not moving the ball, man. They're not moving the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Mo pointed
impossible.
It out. Mo pointed it out, right? What game was that, Mo? The Warriors, right? And I was like, dang, they should do more of that. And you were like, they only did it once. After that, they never went back to it. It was one possession where they shared the rock like that
good
and moved
though.
It.
It was a great
possession.
An awesome one. It was Harden drives into the paint, kicks it out, swing, swing, swing. I think they got Patty Mills in the corner for a three, but it's like, that was it. I was waiting for this the rest of the game. It stopped.
Other than that, it's going great. You know?
I mean, their defense is in the top 10. We're the six in defensive rating.
But
I would have never expected that.
Feel...
Harden DPOY.
Oh, boy. You're right.
Oh, boy.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Hey, speaking of struggles, the Lakers are struggling. My favorite stat from this past week is that you had LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook play 150 total minutes in a game, and they lost to the Sacramento Kings at home.
How did that make you feel that the Kings got that win?
Hilarious. It made me feel hilarity. Yeah, like, I was laughing so hard. You know what's funny? So I turned the game off. It was like 106-100. I had been doing radio like all damn day on Friday. I was just like tapped out. I was like, man, I just want to go chill and like do nothing and watch some bullshit TV, right? And so it was 100, like radio show ends. It's 106-100. Lakers are up with like, I don't know, maybe a minute and a half left in the fourth. And I was like, all right, this is probably going to be fine, right? And then I pick up my phone like 2 hours later. And I see the score. And I was like, what the fuck happened? Like, what? 140, 130. How many overtime? Three overtimes? Like, what are you talking about? And I went back and watched the end of that game from the end of regulation through the overtime. And I was just dumbfounded. I'm like, yo, hey, you man. Can't put You're the Kings away at home.
Watching a Lakers game.
I had a different experience. I'm watching Duke and Gonzaga. And that game had just ended.
Oh, we're going to get to that, Jay King.
Yeah, we're going to get to that, too. Jay, you're not ducking it. You're not ducking it.
I'm a Duke fan. I'm definitely not ducking anything.
Hey, so it's going to come up. It's going to come up quick. But, like, that game ends, and I look, and it's, like, maybe, like, 39 seconds left of the fourth, right?
Yeah.
So I chime in, and I'm like, ah, okay, let's see what plays here. And I didn't realize that LeBron had been guarding – is this Terrence Davis?
Yes.
And Terrence Davis is making him work. Like, work, 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 work. We the same age, so I don't want to be chasing a 20-something years old player either. So I feel you, LeBron. LeBron should not be doing that, but he has to because their defense sucks, right?
Yeah, but also, like, but wait, then, hold on, Trey. It's Terrence Davis. Like, that feels like they're hiding him, not that he's chasing him. Like,
yeah, but at the end of the day, he's still, you know, once he fouled out, then he's like, oh, shit, Bagley. Can't post, can't do a lot of shit, you know what I'm saying? Good for Bagley getting out of the doghouse,
exactly.
Too.
Go get you some minutes, right?
Really good.
You know, that's Gentry's doing there. But you look at this and you look and you say, okay, LeBron's taking another three. Okay, maybe he makes the game winner. He has no legs. He has no legs. But the thing is, to this point, is what we're watching, right? And I put out a tweet saying, realistically, 6 years ago, I felt that LeBron was going to play to year 19, right? Mm-hmm. There's no question in my mind. But that he would be a Karl Malone-style player. A back to the basket, facilitate off of that, and fade away, right? Does his fade away. I didn't expect him to be shooting high volume threes. Like, he's shooting 13 threes right now. Like, that's Steph shit. Steph barely even shoot over 10. He's starting to do it now. But it took a long time till last year for Steph to start shooting many threes and saying, you know what? I'm going to just start gunning. For LeBron to do that, to go 2-13 that game, that ain't it. That ain't it. They don't run no offense, Zach. LeBron gets the ball, ISO, everybody else watches. Even Anthony Davis' jumpers are bad. His three-pointers are bad.
Yeah. I think Kirk Goldsberry had the stat that Anthony Davis is the least efficient jump shooter in the NBA right now.
That tracks. But the LeBron James aspect of it, like in the second overtime, though, Trey, he started going to the basket, right? Like started taking these guys off the dribble, was getting and ones and things like that. After that, the third overtime, that's where the legs were gone. And he was completely tired and had no gas. AD is not helping him. I think the door is pretty closed now on AD being at the level of a Tim Duncan or anything like that. People that were hyping him up after the bubble, I think we're looking at it going like, man,
pretty close. Not the guy. This shit's welded shut.
Okay. I wasn't going to go that
far. Not a damn chance. Like, no. Right. Not a damn chance. Like, get out of here.
You know, I think after the bubble performance, I think after that, we just haven't seen that player. We didn't see it before the bubble, and we haven't seen it even remotely close after the bubble. I think that's a big issue.
The bubble was just it was just a Nike camp with good food. That's all it was.
I wish I could shoot in the bubble. I might have had a jump shot.
Listen, everybody that played bubble aren't playing well. They're not. It was. There's no travel. You get the, you know, the little treatment. Yes, you're away from your family. Maybe played a mental aspect in it. But as far as a hooper, it helped a lot of guys. You just wake up and hoop. You ain't got to do nothing. You ain't got to dress up. You don't have to do media like that. You just play basketball. That's like a good-ass basketball camp. So now you get to the point. The Lakers losing to the Suns last year was the worst thing that could have happened to them. Nobody fears the Lakers.
No, why would you? Nobody, look at the way they play.
But I'm just saying, them losing, no one fears them.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you was like, oh, I got LeBron. Shit, I can't play with LeBron. No, that performance against Indy? It's Indy, right. Though.
No, the worst thing about for the Lakers is trading for Russ. He just doesn't fit the team. Like, everything that they gave up, they're all killing in Washington. Now, maybe they would have moved some of those guys to get healed and things like that, but Russ just doesn't work with this squad. Like, I understood why they wanted him in the sense of it's another name, LA, all of that stuff, but he just doesn't work in the squad. That's the problem for the Lakers, right? Like, that's the issue at the end of the day. And Russ has been playing well, but with that, these other guys can't make up for him. For what he does defensively, he's not very good. Everything, you know, can't shoot, can't spread the floor, and it just crowds the paints for these guys.
And they're just playing.
They sacrifice their supporting cast to get a third star.
And that's not a star right now.
And the third star is dragging them down.
Russ has been bad. I don't know if I feel comfortable saying that he's dragging them down. They play stupid basketball.
But here's the thing. Russ plays stupid basketball.
Yeah, but that is it. Russ infected LeBron James. LeBron plays dumb basketball.
LeBron plays smart basketball. If you surround him with spacers and you allow him to create and you give him a team that makes sense, they didn't do that. They got old guys. They got who are almost out of the league. They got young guys who don't know what they're doing. They've got Russ who clogs the paint and takes bad shots and steals possessions from the smartest player of his generation, maybe the smartest player of all time. So, yes, they're going to get dumber. Of course they're going
to
get dumber.
But that should cause LeBron to play dumber basketball. Like, he's the genius out there. Right?
But you just make it so much tougher when you go from good role players who defend their asses off, take some of the pressure off LeBron on that end, and know their role offensively.
All right, so
that is so much easier of a formula for LeBron to be a maestro. You add Russell Westbrook to the mix, and we've seen it for a long time. Like even when he was playing at an MVP level, there were times when it was like, man, Russ is kind of destructive right now. And granted, back then, his good way, 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 way outweighed the bad. It doesn't outweigh the bad by that much anymore, if it does at all. And especially on this roster for this Lakers team, they needed defense. They needed shooters.
For sure. You're not wrong about any of that. One, they should be playing Russ at center. But two, you're not wrong about any of that. But I think it's scapegoating to just say this is on Russ. LeBron is not playing smart basketball. AD is not playing smart or effective basketball. Like, these are two all-time players who are supposed to raise the level of the guys around them. And I don't think, look, I Russ deserves blame, but man, that he doesn't deserve the blame for why they're playing bad. That's my issue with it. Like, these guys are making horrible decisions, lazy decisions out there. And yeah, it's only November, but then it's going to be, it's only December. Ah, we're not even the trade deadline yet. Ah, you know, the buyout market. Let's see what's there. And then it's going to be, oh shit, it's April. are the Lakers going to, you know, make it through the play-in tournament? You imagine the Lakers in a first round series against the Warriors or the Suns right now? They're going to get run playing like this. Yeah, they're going to get run playing like this. Like they need to improve so much. And so Sam Amick had a great article a couple days ago on The Athletic, just asking questions. And one of the main ones was, you know, Frank Vogel's seat. Is it getting hot? Is it warming up? And I don't know if it's that extreme yet, but if they keep playing like this, this mediocre ass basketball throughout the season, you know, wouldn't shock me if at some point halfway through they decide, all right, let's see who else can coach this team.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
That's the only change they really have, right? Like everybody talks about like, oh, this is going to be like LeBron was in Cleveland and get all those guys traded. Who's training for these dudes?
They don't have picks. They don't have picks to dangle, right? Like, it's,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. They don't have any asset to add to it.
What would Malik Monk fetch?
You know, I mean, like, no, seriously, like, you don't have a draft pick to add, even if you wanted to trade Russ to incentivize another team. So, you know, the only other option is let's get a new coach in there and see if they can change something. I don't think this is Vogel's fault. I don't think this is really as much a coaching issue, but it's just he's going to end up in that situation because that's the only change they could possibly make in season. I mean, if you're a buyout candidate, are you really going to try to go running to the Lakers if it's a conversation between the Lakers or Warriors?
Or Suns or Nets or Bucks or whatever,
you know you have a better chance with those other teams right now. Like, I don't even think they're going to be that much into the buyout market because I don't think anybody's going to be that interested.
Yeah, I mean, Trey, like, where do you think how good do you think the Lakers will become this season? Should we still be viewing them as a possible championship contender at some point? I'm saying not the way they're playing now, but do you think they can get to that level?
With a little luck, yes. Like, I hate to say injuries and things of that nature, but
yeah, but it might take that.
That it's going to take that luck and a pathway cleared for them to get to where they need to go. Because as alarming as it is, you know, they're 20 games in, and when you factor things in of trying to put guys in, like, I've heard people like, oh, but Trevor Ariza. It's like, it's not, Trevor Ariza's not going to change their defense overnight. You know what I'm saying?
He will help, though.
He will help. They need him. Right. They really, I mean, shit, they need everybody they can get at this point. They can put in Jimmy G or, you know, whoever they want at this point. James Worthy can sub in at this point. No, they need everybody.
It's all wrinkled hands on deck. Like, that's what it is right now. Like, they just.
but trading for someone isn't going to shift it. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's something that they need to lock in and hold each other accountable. You know, Frank Vogel's not calling plays. The defense isn't playing defense. You know what I mean? Like, and then you're asking a 36-year-old, almost 37-year-old LeBron James to do more than what's asked. Those guys were traded and brought over to make his life easier, not harder. Mm-hmm. And it's been the experiment from hell because he's had to go out and score a 30-something points versus the Indiana Pacers, or, you know, compete and go into three overtimes with the Sacramento Kings. You know what I mean? Like, it shouldn't be that. And the guys that they let go were the guys that gave a little effort on defense. They weren't the lockdown defenders, but KCP, Caruso, hell, even Kuzma even tried to play defense at times.
Yeah, Kuz became a pretty solid defender by the end of that thing.
Exactly. So yeah. It's like it's not about, you know, it's about stop trade. My advice for future GMs is stop going for names and go get dogs. That's all it boils out to. Go get dogs, things that fit your needs and not the names, because the names are becoming the names, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's hard when your other two names come to you going, we want this guy.
Yeah.
It does get a little bit hard for Palinka to be like, no. We're just going to go get Buddy Hield. Like, I understand it. I from Palinka's perspective of like, well, shit, fine type of situation. But like, this is not it just sucks. And just got to stop letting the players sort of, hey, we're going to go get it and we're going to make it work. If it clearly doesn't work, if you look at the pieces, just going like, no, it's not going to work. We got to go another way. Like, you got to have that conversation. But I just don't think Palinka was in a position to really fight LeBron and AD on it. Because, like, we're hearing the stories. LeBron's on recruiting pitches. You know, it's almost like college football and taking them on tours of the facility to see if guys want to come here. I mean, it's a tough spot for Palinka.
They need better boosters. That's
the easy spot. Caruso.
Yes.
I still can't believe they didn't re-sign him.
Couldn't have been easier.
Oh, my God.
Wanted that. I'm so glad THT is fully panning out.
If you looked at the Lakers' stats right now, like just looked at them, had no clue who they were attached to, you'd be like, oh, that's the Kings. they're the Pistons. You know?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, though.
No, you're right.
Like, they're in the 20th in in the 20s in defensive rating. They're in the 20s in offensive
rating.
They're
a worse defensive team than the Thunder by far.
They've been a legitimately bad basketball team in every single way.
Yeah.
They're lost.
All right, let's move on. We don't have to spend too much time on this because we ended up getting some better news than what it looked like Friday night, when it looked like John Morant had torn his knee all apart in what ended up being a blowout loss to the Hawks. And luckily, it's just a sprain, so I don't know what that means for him, whether it's 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever that's going to mean. But John Morant did not tear an ACL or an MCL or a meniscus or anything. It's just a knee sprain. So that's great news. But Mo, do you think that we've talked about this, you know, in terms of, you know, them getting Kyle Anderson more into the role they had last year and everything? Like, do you think that is now likely with Ja out, you can kind of get some of these guys more back to what they were doing and then bring Ja back into the mix and have it be more of a symbiotic relationship?
Yeah, because I think this is kind of what happened last year. You know, Ja went out in the ankle 3 weeks with a sprained ankle, and then, you know, the other guys had to sort of step up, and then you just kind of reintegrate Ja back in, and then you know what you have with these guys. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see something similar along those lines, just because it's almost exactly what happened last year, except thankfully this wasn't, this could have been so much worse, you know, and it didn't help with Ja tweeting out or putting out on Instagram, it's in God's hands now, because everybody got immediately scared once we saw that one.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What does everyone think the Grizzlies will end up being? Jay, you think they'll figure it out?
Outside of the playoffs? What's figure it out? You know, like,
I mean, not be a horrible defensive team.
I don't think they can make it to the upper echelon of the West. I think if Ja Morant has to miss time, like, that team is going to really, really suffer. They don't have enough creation without him.
Yeah.
And the defense is just puzzling to me. I know they've had some changes. I know some big pieces from last year either aren't there anymore or are playing different roles. But, like, They did the grit and grind Grizzlies proud the last couple of years, just really defending their asses off, and that just hasn't been there. That's been one of the weirdest subplots of the season to me, is the Grizzlies defense.
Yeah.
Like how do they have the very worst defense in the league by far? It's not even close.
Yeah, it's weird because after the last two seasons, I would have thought like, oh, these young guys can just defend. Because a young team defending really well, and now it's like, Jesus.
The Blazers and Pelicans look over at the Grizzlies, and they're like, damn, that team really sucks on defense.
Yeah, that's rough. That's really rough.
Like, Brandon Ingram's looking over like, oh, man, they really don't try at all on defense. Like, can you believe those lazy bums?
Speaking of guys who don't try, let's go over to the Celtics, Jay. Okay? And there's a report from ESPN with executives and coaches basically questioning the mental makeup of this team, saying, quote, they've looked like players that legitimately don't enjoy each other's success, and it's been like that for years. One Eastern Conference assistant coach, according to Tim Bontem, said Jason Tatum is about Jason Tatum. I don't think he cares about winning now, and if he does, it's on his terms. He doesn't want to score 15 and win. He wants to score 39 and win. Does any of this reporting surprise you? Is this stuff that you feel as well being around that team?
It's not really stuff that I feel, but if you look at the last couple seasons, I can see why you think that. And I think that's a reputation that's going to follow Tatum, that's going to follow Jaylen Brown until they prove otherwise. And I definitely don't put all of the problems on them. I actually think, like, with the supporting cast that the Celtics built, with no shooting in the backcourt whatsoever, they've made things really difficult on them offensively. And they don't have another primary creator on the roster. Like, Dennis Schroeder's a scorer. Marcus Smart can pass, but he's not going to really break a defense down like any of the top guys. So they've made things really difficult for them. So, like, it at this point of their career, it's fair to say all of that stuff. Tatum plays defense. Tatum rebounds. Like, he does a lot of things that a guy that cares about winning does. I think he's grown a lot as a passer, but that's not and has never been his strong suit. It's just the role that the Celtics need him to play because they don't have a top point guard right now. And so they need him to do probably more than at this moment he's capable of doing. And some nights it's been bad. Like,
yeah,
when he goes bad, he goes bad. It's like 4 for 20, like 5 for 21. I think he leads the NBA in missed field goal attempts right now, which is not where you want to be. So I think, like, all those criticisms are valid. Even Ime Udoka is saying it.
Yeah.
You know, like, Ime Udoka is out there saying, we need to play together. We need to not be out for our own stats. We need to really commit to team basketball. And so, no, it doesn't surprise me that some anonymous assistant coach is going to say the same thing. Like, Ime Udoka is going out there and putting his name to it, you know?
Yeah, Trey. Trey, what do you make of the Jason Tatum experience right now?
I mean, I've always chose Brown. Not even lie. I honestly, after his playoff performance, I was thinking that going into this season he would emerge in top five, and it hasn't been the case. But yeah, I don't get it. It's such a weird situation. But it also falls upon, like, I know Ime's trying. He hasn't been, you know, great, you know, for his first year, but, like, especially to Celtic standards, I guess. But there's no true alpha established. Like, no one came in and said, all right, Jason, it's your team, or Jaylen, it's your team, you know? And I think that's the huge, the biggest issue. And without that, you know, it's just too much inconsistency because both are trying to, you know, win a game for the Celtics, and it's a clash. And then also they need a point guard. I've been screaming this for the longest, man. Jason Tatum, I mean,
yeah.
I'm a big fan of his, but he's just too inconsistent. You know, like,
he's just,
what are you going to say?
he's just not a playmaker. Like, it's, you're asking him to do something that's not within his nature at all to figure out. And he's never been that guy, right? Like, he gets right. tunnel vision and everything like that. And Trey, I'm with you, man. Like, they need a point guard. Like, this team would look very different if they had a Ricky Rubio type.
You know, I mean, I've been screaming for Jalen Brunson.
Yeah. Anybody that can just sort of be like, yo, let's get the ball moving here a little bit and get that ball moving so they get out of this whole my turn, your turn between Brown and Tatum. I think that's kind of what's becoming the issue. And you know, like Jay and I talked about it on a Anything Potable podcast, like you're going to have these issues because I don't think Marcus Smart is a good enough playmaker. You know, I don't think he's that guy that can do it. And that's their problem, you know, and I think they're going to continue to have those issues until they solve it.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever going to get to a point where it's like, oh, they should move on from Jason Tatum, but there's got to be a certain point where he needs to just grow up. Like, I get it. You got a Gatorade commercial. You got all the stuff. Like, been to the conference finals. Like, you've done all these things. You're a hell of a player, but you kind of just like grow up. Grow up and go play good basketball. Like, it's a choice for him, right?
Right.
And that's the problem. It's not like teams can't take away him playing good basketball. He's taking it away. And until he decides to do it, like, it's just going to make, you know, the Celtics will be just good enough to not be a joke, but they're not going to be, it's not going to be the standard that they want to set for that organization again. Like, it's just not going to be that. Speaking of setting standards, Jay King has been very vocal in, I think online, but definitely in group chats about Chet Holmgren being the absolute truth. Maybe the greatest prospect we've ever seen.
I never. Whoa.
And so he played against Duke the other night, Paolo Banchero, and Jay, he got worked. Paolo, in the fight to be the number one player, looked so much better. And so I was talking with Amin Al-Hassan about this on the radio the other night as they were playing, and he had never seen Chet play before. This was a first look at Chet. And his concern was, when you look at these skilled seven-footers, right? These skilled, like, dudes are like 6'9 to 7 feet tall. A Brandon Ingram, a Kevin Durant. They move like guards. Chet moves like a big man. And if that's the case, it limits what he could become. And then you look at Paolo. My God. Like, that's what that looks like. So, are you ready to abandon Chet Holmgren after that game?
First of all, I just want to state that you think I took a loss here, but I took a win because I'm a Duke fan.
What does that mean?
so you think Hollow outplaying Chet was like this huge hit to me, but really I'm sitting there loving it because the Blue Devils knocked off Mighty Gonzaga.
Mighty Gonzaga.
But yeah, so when I see Chet, I see him as like a point center, like totally different type of player than basically anybody. And I still think there's an enormously high ceiling there. But when you see him against someone as physically gifted, as built as Paolo, you're like, okay, like, that's what some NBA dudes are going to do to him. Yeah. You know?
Right.
And so I am definitely lower on Chet than I was entering this season. He hasn't filled out at all. He's still a toothpick. But his combination of rim protection, ball handling, and skills for however tall he is special. And it's rare. And so I still believe in Chet. But that was a win for me, man.
That was a win for you.
I'm always interesting. Winning.
Even when what you course does I lose, that mean? I win. That doesn't mean anything.
You're a Duke fan. You're not a winner.
I'm a Duke fan, baby.
Yeah, like that, trust me, you've just lowered several rankings in my own mind. Like you suck.
I was the biggest Grant Hill guy when I was little. That's why.
What does that mean? Wait, what?
What's
I was a big Corey Maggette guy. Oh man, I love me some Corey Maggette.
He's perfect, Zach.
Oh my God, yeah. I have a question. Now, I have a theory that Corey Maggette is the one that popularized slapping the backboard after a dunk. Am I wrong on that?
You're wrong, but it's cool.
I feel like Toby Bailey and them used to do that shit all the time.
I mean, it's been before that, but, you know, just on a national level.
I'm not saying he invented it. I'm saying, like, he popularized, like, he made it, like, more of a thing.
Nah, it was popping way before that. Like, the whole tap culture, though. Like, tap culture in general was just so big in the early 90s that just, like, you know, the next thing was dunking and clapping glass.
Right.
I think the fun police of the ref just taking it out was just whack, though.
Oh, it's super whack. Yeah. No, but I, like, so, obviously, we have video of Elgin Baylor doing the Euro step, right?
Yeah.
And Cerutis, step. Yeah, Cerutis Marcellonis is the one who gets popularized with bringing it to the NBA and everything, though it was there 30 years prior, 50, you know, 20 years prior. But I think Corey Maggette is the Cerutis Marcellonis of tapping the backboard. That's my theory here. That's how I'm going to spin this and adjust this. So I feel like
I love where this podcast is going.
Because he was, man. He was slapping the... Absurd, he wasn't just... He wasn't just tapping...
Line. Corey Maggette is the Cerutis.
Shit, how did I become the J. King in a J. King segment? This is...
Oh, this is terrible. That might be the funniest sentence ever said.
That might have to end the podcast.
Yeah, I think that's it. Check out No Dunks. Check out all the team-specific shows like Anything's Potable. Check out Michelle Beadle's podcast, What Did I Miss? Check it all out on the Athletic Podcast Network. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the Athletic. Oh, my God. Go get you a deal right now. I don't know what the deals are, but just go get you a deal if you haven't subscribed for the best coverage of sports on the internet. For Trevon Edwards, for J. King, for Mo Dacchio, for Cerutis Marcellonis, and Corey Maggette, I'm Zach Harper. Keep it locked in on the Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.